Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 564, The 0% Project continues with the Corey Feldman, Corey Haim classic.
License to Drive.
Dream a Little Dream. Was Corey Feldman in License to Drive? I thought that was just Corey Haim.
Yeah.
Were they both in that?
I think they both were.
It's both of them, yeah.
I saw it, the last time I saw it, I was in the theater. Like, that's... So,
wow.
Cut me a little slack.
Yeah, we're doing Lost Boys, right?
What's that?
We're doing Lost Boys. That's what we're doing.
Oh, sure. That's got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. So let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Shameless plugs, because I forgot to do them last episode. Don't forget, you can get us wherever you get your podcast. While you're there, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Of course, feel free to rate and review us. That always helps. And find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. Like the page, join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers. And if you would like to become a real-life League of Show Sharer, we would love to have you. The way you do that is just share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode last week: Lane LeVanway, Brent Smith, Chris Williams, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Sherman Powers, Aaron Marlowe, Susan Carlson, Glenn Cougar, Mellon Brewer, Ron Johnson,
oh, so good.
Tom Comiskey, Julianne Jordan, Chris Magic Man, Chris Sanders, Librarian Cynthia, Samuel Banks, Griffin Fox Smith, Ralph Tribble, Carl Clarkson, Travis Tewitt, and Colby Mack. So thank you for powering through the not box office report and or heart beeps. I guess I had
a friend send me a text and said, I'm going to start Heartbeeps. And I was like, bold move. Have you not listened to that episode? And she was like, no, I wanted to watch the movie first. And then I got a text about 10 minutes later. She said, I gave up.
I'll tell you what.
I was like, well, all right.
If you thought Heartbeeps was bad, boy, I have something for you.
I was longing for the glory days of Heartbeeps watching this movie.
Yeah. 100%, I would watch Heartbeeps again before I would ever, ever contemplate watching this movie.
Ever. And it's weird because, like, those two dudes together were untouchable.
They were, though.
Like, in their prime, in their heyday, when you put Corey Haim and Corey Feldman in a movie together, it was guaranteed success.
Was it?
Maybe for Tiger Beat magazine.
Right. But that's who it was going for.
That's who it was aiming for. Those two
They weren't making good movies, though.
Well, no, of course not. But neither were the teen actors of our generation. They weren't making good movies. They were making movies that appealed to that demographic.
Well, excuse me, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter.
Right. I rest my case.
The teenage actors from my generation were like Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland,
Kurt Russell. Michael Landon.
But were they? What big movies were these guys in together? License to Drive, I guess, did okay.
Lost Boys.
And Lost Boys, but that was kind of the first one that paired them up. But besides Lost...
That wasn't, like, really a Corey Corey's vehicle, though. Like, they were
they were just in it together, yeah.
They were the comic relief. They weren't the focal point of the film. But outside of that, movies that they made together, like, what was the big hit?
I've got to say, it's probably National Lampoon's Last Resort.
Ooh. So, okay, so that was 94?
Yeah, 1994.
So Dream a Little Dream 2 is 95.
How crazy is that? Like, I never even have heard, maybe I forgot it, but I've never even heard of this National Lampoon's Last Resort movie. And yeah, that was a year before the sequel, which we're not even going to get into the sequel. Maybe Joe and I will touch upon it at the end, but we both started the second movie because, yes, this movie got a sequel, and you will be shocked once we start talking about this one. But they made a straight-to-VHS sequel, and oh my God.
My guess is National Lampoon's Last Resort was probably also direct to video.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a safe bet.
What was National Lampoon kind of went away for a while, and then they were doing those direct to DVD or direct to VHS movies. Was it Van Wilder? Is Van Wilder the one that got them back into theaters?
Well, that was surely the best one since the old Animal House days.
Yeah, it probably was.
And then they went away again.
Yeah, because then they started trying to do all, you know, they went back into their terrible, you know, terrible stuff. But like Van Wilder, that was like, oh my God, that was the best thing to come out of there in years.
So good.
Oh yeah, I just watched it again. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I forgot some of the stuff that was in that movie. It's definitely of its time. But yeah, I mean, it's so crazy now to see Cal Penn and like how stereotypical of a character, like, because we all know how Cal Penn talks now, and like he can be, you know, he's a good actor, he can be in serious stuff, and
he doesn't have an accent.
They literally cast him like it's probably his first movie or one of them, and he is playing the stereotypical most offensive Indian stereotype. It's crazy.
So when I Google Corey Haim, Corey Feldman movies,
it
brings up the following. So this is off Google, because it's hard to do an IMDb and cross-reference it. So this is what Google shows me. It shows me Lost Boys in 87, License to Drive in 88, which I looked up. It made $22 million on an $8 million budget. So, I mean, it's
a big hit.
It's a moderate hit. I mean, $22 million on $8 million. I feel like
in 1988.
Yeah, like that seems, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hit, but not. I mean, it never justified a sequel. You know.
Neither did this one.
But it got one. That's my point.
It did get one. Yeah.
From a business standpoint, it got it. But so then in '89 you get Dream a Little Dream, and that seems that seems to have killed it. Because then I don't see anything again until National Lampoon's Last Resort in 94, and then Dream a Little Dream 2 in 95, and then a movie called Busted in 97. And then from there, you get Dickie Roberts, former child star, which were probably just cameo punchlines. That's not an actual
movie.
And then after that, you get nothing until shortly before Corey Haim's death when they made the two Lost Boys straight-to-video sequels.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's so weird. I guess I just felt like they were just part... Maybe they were just part of culture.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like...
They were always together. I just assumed that they made a bunch of movies together.
They did those three movies back-to-back pretty quickly. And they, you know, obviously Lost Boys was huge. License to Drive did okay. Dream a Little Dream to bed, and then and then it was pretty much over, it looks like. And so I think they're just, it's an easy thing to remember because they both have the name Corey, and I guess
I felt like they were just so synonymous with each other.
Well, and I think they were friends in real life, so they probably were showing up in media appearances and gossip columns and stuff like that together a lot, but they had
their own reality show. Do you remember?
Yeah, called the Two Corys.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think
was that Haim trying to get sober?
I forget what it was about, but I definitely got the vibe that it was Corey Feldman trying to keep Corey Haim busy in order to get him clean. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Because I mean, Corey Haim was always struggling. I mean, obviously Feldman's had his struggles too, But
sure, sure.
But yeah, so it's I don't think these guys were as big of a deal, at least from a box office standpoint, as you might think.
Yeah, it's just that you're right. It's just they were ingrained in pop culture, the two Coreys thing. They went hand in hand. Yeah, it's really strange that you remember them one way, and then you go back and watch a movie like this that they're both in, and you're just like, what? Like, this movie is mind-boggling. I'm almost, like, I have a lot to say, but then I'm almost at a loss for words because it's just, it's so confusing how anyone thought this was a good idea. This was a two-hour long movie.
I did not realize that until I was an hour and a half in, and I was like, "What? We're not close to a resolution. How much longer does this have?" I was like, "Oh my god, it's got 45 minutes left."
This is a mess. This is a complete mess of a movie. It's 2 hours long, and also like the people that it has in it, like Jason Robards, Piper Laurie, Harry Dean Stanton. It violates it violates the Walsh Stanton rule. Like, he's in this movie, and it's a big steaming piece of garbage. Like, it totally throws that whole thing out the window. Like, it's just crazy. Like, I mean, and he's hardly in it, but, like, when he is, you're like, yeah, it's Harry Dean Stanton, like, trying to
He does come on screen, and I was like, oh, cool, cool. Oh, all right. Well,
he shows up, like, you see him walking at the beginning. He has one little interaction with the wife that I can still hardly understand. And then
you mean the fact that she's cheating on him?
Yeah, like, they don't ever...
And that's never referenced ever again?
They don't ever address it. It never comes up. There's no resolution. They're best friends. Happy days. We're all good at the end, you know. And then he has one other scene where he's talking to Corey Feldman, you know, out in front of his house or whatever. Like, he's in such small little roles where, you know, I was hoping we were going to get at least more of him to do something, but nope.
No, we got none of it.
Some of the other 0% project stuff we've done, Heartbeat, Staying Alive, Megaforce, like, they're misguided, but they're functionally watchable. And
I was completely entertained by Staying Alive and Heartbeats. As bad as Heartbeats was, I found a lot of fun things to poke at during the movie.
Yeah, this was like, honestly, like, short of just going into like amateur filmmaking, I don't know that I've ever seen a major studio release starring name actors that is just this bad. I mean, it's
awful.
I said,
is this someone's film school project?
Yeah. There are large stretches of dialogue. I mean, first off, we'll get into the story that makes little, if any, sense. But like, there are like, I feel like they thought because Corey Haim and Corey Feldman were friends that they would have this instant rapport and chemistry on screen and that they could riff their dialogue and wouldn't that be fun? And because there are large portions of this movie that feel as if they are legit making it up on the spot.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. You said that. It was not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that, and I was like, oh, it won't be that bad. And then I sat down last night, I was like, oh, Christ, it's that bad.
I mean, there are scenes where they're just rambling about nothing.
Yep, and I will say, I do think that they do have a rapport, but for whatever reason, in License to Drive and in Lost Boys, like, it's there, but for whatever reason, in this one, I don't know if they had, you know, I'm going to assume that they've already started dealing with their own demons.
Oh,
at this point,
they're
in
both
1988.
Massively coked up and on heroin while making this movie.
You can tell.
Yeah.
Like, there's a switch between License to Drive and Lost Boys and those two guys and this movie, and you can feel it. And it is, you're right, that I thought that probably that was the case, is that they were both stoned out of their minds.
And it's interesting.
And it comes across.
There's not much online about, like, the making of this film. And I would really be interested to know if some of the problems of the film structurally was them trying to edit around them being too high to work.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, when you see those rough cuts between just regular like lines of dialogue. When Corey Haim is sitting in a car and it flashes to white in between
black.
Single lines
of
dialogue.
So weird. It was black.
No, are you talking about the scene at the end of the movie?
I'm talking about when he's sitting in the car and he's just talking to himself and he says one line of dialogue, flash to white. One line of dialogue.
It flashes to black.
I thought it was black too. Yeah.
Was that one black?
I'm almost positive it was flashing to black because I am positive because I thought like we lost the feed on the video or something because it
was
black.
That's what I thought too.
Oh.
And
the other
like,
one's
oh,
white then. The okay, one at the
yeah.
end
I was
is
like,
white
oh,
then.
But there's
oh,
a,
shucks. The movie cut out. I don't have to watch anymore.
There's a scene towards the end where Corey Haim is sitting in a car and he's just talking to himself and he'll say a line and then it fades to black and then it pops back up but he says another line. None of the lines are related to each other. Like he's not and he's not offering any like exposition or moving the story along. He's literally just saying random things to himself and I'm like I watched it with my wife who like aggressively hated this movie. She had never seen it and she was just like, she's like, I want to punch this movie in the and
oh, everybody that watches this movie should aggressively hate it. Like yeah. this movie, yeah, if it weren't for this is an unwatchable movie.
Yeah,
I would never watch this if I didn't have to.
She even asked, she's like, why does it keep fading to black? Especially because it's a technique that they have not used up to this point in the film. And you're an hour and 45 minutes into an hour and 55 minute movie, and they're doing it. And I was like, my guess is there's literally 45 minutes of footage of him doing this, and they just...
I think you're right.
And that was the only way they could hide, you know, the edit. It was awful.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. He couldn't get a coherent monologue, you know, four or five lines of dialogue. He could not just do that and have it make sense. He basically sat there and rambled a bunch of random lines, and they cut together in the most abrupt way possible.
They did as best they could. Yeah,
four or
I guess.
Five of those lines. I mean, it's awful.
What we haven't even mentioned yet, this is a body switch movie.
Yeah,
which I had no idea. So all when they get to the switch, I'm just like, wait, what? Wait.
Yeah, so they're trying to coast on all the popularity of the body switch movies of the 80s, right? So there were like four or five body switch movies, and this one was taking the teen, you know, the teen approach for like a teen comedy body switch, except for it's creepy as hell, and it's an old man like getting it on with an underage girl.
But
right? Because that's what's happening.
I mean, yeah, and I guess their way around that is that the... Okay, so here's the problem. Here's the breakdown real quick. Corey Haim, Corey Feldman are, I guess, street tough punk kids.
I don't even think they're that.
I use air quotes with that.
I think they're just kids in high school.
You think they're just burnouts, I guess?
I think they're the lovable losers.
Yeah.
I guess. So they keep cutting through this guy. Anyway, keep cutting through this guy's lawn. Obviously, the old man doesn't like it.
He's Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace.
He is Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace. So basically, this old man and they're getting older, and his wife has had enough of his weird
hippy
ideas?
Dippy. Yeah, he's very like kind of hippy dippy, like
very hippy dippy,
like new agey.
So I thought they were saying that he was senile. Like that's where I thought we were going with this, and that's what his idea was.
When Harry Dean Stanton comes in and kisses this dude's wife, I'm like, he has dementia or something. She's moved on to a new relationship, but like, you know, she's still there for him, trying to help him, and they're married. But like, you know, she's with Harry Dean Stanton. But this guy basically is just dedicated to his work. He doesn't pay any attention to her. And this is basically like, I mean, it's like a Christmas Carol. Like he's like Scrooge, and he's going to be visited by these ghosts, and they're going to teach him at the end of the day that like he needs to pay attention to his wife and live life. Like that's all this movie is doing. It's very simplistic, and they go about it the most complex, convoluted, and crazy way you could ever imagine doing it.
He has devised this like yoga routine where he will somehow implant the consciousness of himself and his wife into two younger bodies.
Yes.
Or like take their consciousness out of the real world and live in the dream world.
Sure.
I don't know.
Are you
hang on.
Is this kind of what you're guessing, or was that said and I totally missed it?
This is No, that's what I'm guessing.
Oh, okay. Because I was just like, I never understood, like, when they go into the backyard and do yoga, and I'm just like, what is this supposed to be accomplishing or doing?
I initially thought that, like, the idea was, because he says, he's like, I want to live with you forever, right? And their bodies are failing, they're getting older, and he has figured out this way to, like, live in the dream world.
Yes.
And that way they don't age.
Exactly. It's just a made up, like, this is not based on any kind of proven whatever. They've made up this theory. It's just like technical gobbledygook, you know, like we go into the alpha dream state, then we can do this and fiddle faddle, blah blah blah. Like it's garbage.
We'll never age, we'll live forever.
Yeah.
So they're doing this whole thing, they and then all of a sudden here comes Corey Feldman and his crew. And they bump into him, and all of a sudden, the old man has been transposed into Corey Feldman's body, which I was like, okay, body switch movie, not a problem.
Yeah, and I can get behind. Weird. Like, I remember when this movie came out, like, they pushed the hell out of this movie. I mean, there was stuff for it everywhere. And I had, until I watched it yesterday, no idea that this was a body swap movie.
That's what I just said. That's what I told Kevin.
Did you see? Did you read about it? That in the trailer they don't show anything about body swap?
No, I didn't.
They did not market this as a body swap movie, so people thought it was just a teen comedy. And then some people were like, "Oh yeah, 2-time Oscar winner Jason Robards is in this movie, like for 2 minutes." Like they completely tried to bait and switch people on this movie.
Well, and that might have been because I think it came at the tail end of a lot of body swap comedies. There was, like, in this same time frame, you get Big, you get which I think everybody knows Big is the Tom Hanks one, and then you had like Father Like Son, which was the Judge Reinhold Kirk Cameron one, I believe, and then
Vice Versa
was the Judge Reinhold one, and then like Father Like, I'm getting them mixed up, but then there was 18 Again, which was the George Burns John Cryer one, I think. And
did they remake that with Zac Efron and Matthew Perry?
They made one called 17 Again, unrelated.
George Burns and Charlie Schlatter.
Oh, okay. In my head, it's always John Cryer in that movie. I don't know why, but there were like a lot of these body swap comedies in 88, 89. And so they might've just figured that they were going to that well, you know, that people would like, I've seen it, you know,
but I wish I hadn't seen it. You know, the thing is, a lot of those movies, though, at least they have somewhat of a simplistic premise. Like, even if you know that you can't make a wish on a Zoltar machine and switch bodies, you know that's made up. You know it's just a fun thing for a movie, and you learn a valuable lesson. But the fact that this movie thinks that it's so complex, and they're going to go into this super meditative alpha state, and you're in this dream world, and now we only have 2 days, or else she'll be lost forever. Like, what is this based on? I mean, you can make things up, but they don't even establish rules in their own world,
right?
Except for just to say, don't go to sleep one more time or you'll lose her forever.
Then they don't follow their rules.
No. Well, but we'll get to that.
No, because at the, yeah.
Because, yeah. Yeah. So the, what's the Meredith Salinger? What's her name?
Salinger.
Meredith Baxter Burney.
Yeah. And it, who seems to have been cast solely for her ability to look a certain way and work out clothes.
You don't say.
And
it's funny, like when I saw her initially, I was like, oh, I get it. Like I get how this gal, they thought this gal was going to be the next like teen heartthrob. Like I understand. And then she opened her mouth and I was like, oh, we are in for a this is gonna be a long go.
I don't know that it's her fault, in all honesty.
I don't think it is,
because she was in the Journey of Natty Gann. She was good in that, and I really think that like this is just a turd of a movie, and she was given nothing to work with. And honestly, I think this woman deserves an Oscar just for being able to gaze at Corey Feldman that lovingly. Like,
yeah,
it's like, I don't know how, like, she could look at him as if she was just enthralled.
The boyfriend that she had, as stereotypical as he was, was the better looking option.
Well, and what was weird,
I'm like, stereotypical, this guy was a sociopathic nut job. This guy was a lunatic.
But not until like the last 30 minutes. Like, up at the beginning, like, he's just one of their friends and he's fine.
Yeah, this is the
weirdest
thing.
Well, no, he does have he had flashes with her where he, like, when he tried to hook up with her and then she smacked him.
Yeah, he was a little,
he was like, what happened?
He was a little pushy. But it's also, yeah, like, I mean, I'm giving the movie a little bit of latitude for when it was made. Like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was.
This movie is super problematic in 2020.
Absolutely. And so I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be a sign that he was a problem or a sign, or just like, that's how boys acted and we were supposed to be okay with it. You know what I'm saying? In 89.
Probably a little bit of both.
In 89, you know?
He's a jerk. He's definitely a jerk the entire movie. But yeah, it goes off the rails at the end. The other weird thing they do with this movie, so usually in your typical high school movie, you have the lovable losers and then you have the bullies. But then they throw this Joel character in who is their friend, but also a bully. Like,
right.
It was really strange how they mixed together those two tropes and they combined them, but then still left the other tropes. You know what I mean? Like,
there was this other group of bullies who picked on them too. Yeah. And I'm just like, who fits in where? Like, I didn't.
It's a triangle.
They don't know.
Yeah. And like, the bullies,
they don't know who
are
fits
like
in where.
The bullies are mean to the bully friend, but then also sometimes their bullies are mean to them. And it's just this really weird dynamic that made it too convoluted.
But even our main characters are bullies. Like, when they're cutting through the old man's lawn, they're like, "Eh, screw off, old man."
Yeah,
like,
but they're not bullies. Know, they're punk teenagers. It's different.
That's fair.
Yeah,
they're
not like, mean to other kids.
But
or like,
they play it like it's supposed to be cute, but then they also show you like show them like deliberately destroying his garden. So in like, it's,
yeah, that's not cute.
It's not just cutting through the yard, because it's like cutting through the yards, and there were the stones, and they could have stayed on the stones, and like, if they wanted them to be the good guys and him to be the crotchety old man, there's a way to convey that. But like, they were also,
yeah,
yeah,
they were also like, that's the problem, is when you want to make somebody, we've seen so many of these teen comedies, and I use that term very loosely,
right,
with this movie, where your lovable loser is just that, like, he's a hapless loser, but he has characteristics that you're still rooting for him.
Right.
Right. Or her, whoever it may be.
Marty McFly.
There is no point in this movie where I am rooting for anybody.
Yeah. I was just rooting for it to be over.
I was rooting for the credits.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they do the body switch, and now he figures out that he, being the Corey Feldman, well, the old man in Corey Feldman's body, which again, like, given Corey Feldman today, maybe I should rephrase that. he realizes that the girl that he bumped into is probably where his wife is. Like, his wife's consciousness is probably in her body.
But now
so they crash into each other, right? Like, they're both coming from separate angles, and they're,
right,
both going to cut through the yard at the same time.
Yes.
The old people do yoga, and by,
correct,
them crashing into each other during this yoga ritual, they then swapped their bodies, and I took it that the old man was completely taking over Corey Feldman, but the girl was like, only part of the old woman's consciousness was,
right,
in hers.
Like
she didn't know.
Well, the whole,
or
consciousness was there, because she would have moments where she would order, like, she'd order something that the old woman would order, or she would liked a song or a certain thing.
But like,
they had,
no, that's what I'm saying. It's partial. That's the whole,
yeah,
thing,
yeah,
isn't,
yeah,
there. If it's, it's
confusing, because Corey Feldman is completely aware that he's really Jason Robards. And,
right,
but the girl has no idea that she's has Piper Laurie inside of her. Like she, so
she's touching her mouth a certain way. She just has little characteristics,
yeah.
But she thinks and acts as if she's just that girl.
Right.
Right.
Where Corey Feldman is...
The old woman's consciousness has not taken over.
Right, where Corey Feldman is 100% Jason Robards. He's still quoting literature in a pretentious manner and you know...
Right.
And confused by the ways of the teenager. You know what I mean?
Calling everybody dude.
Right.
It's messy. It's so messy the way that they swap in these uneven ways. And then whenever he goes to sleep as Corey Feldman, which only happens a couple times because, you know, can't go to sleep. Freddy's going to get you.
I thought the same thing. Don't go to sleep.
Yeah. Like when he goes to sleep, then he's in the dream state and the actual Bobby, the Corey Feldman consciousness is living in his dream state with the old lady that like doesn't know why or where she's there or whatever. She's like locked inside of his house. And then also, is it the young girls there too, part of her consciousness?
So
are they like packing up the house?
Yeah, all four are in this dream world. So the young girl and the old woman are in the house. Feldman and Jason Robards are outside the house. And like, this is what I'm talking about is Robards is saying is like, let's just wake up and let's fix this. And Corey Feldman's like, nah, dude,
I like it here.
Like we could just stay here. I'm cool right here. I didn't really have anything going on out there anyway. You could just live my life as a young man. It's like, you're not the good guy here. Like let the old man get back to his life. He's like, nah, brah. Like you're good. You're all right.
But then he still gives him advice on how to fix it. So
he won't tell him though. He's like, I'll give you a hint and that's it. He never actually tells him how to do it.
But like, why give him a hint at all? Like it makes.
Right.
Yeah.
why would Corey Feldman, this kid that just got into this old man's consciousness, know how to fix it?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How would he know? He's not the one that did this. It's bizarre. It's just bizarre.
But somehow he knows how to do. Well, I guess he knows how to do the old yoga because the old man knows how to do it.
I guess.
But did the old man's consciousness go into his mind? Like, it doesn't. There's no...
Yeah.
It doesn't follow any rules. Like, they didn't make up or establish any set of rules. Again, I don't care in a fantasy, sci-fi, whatever thing. If you're making up your own world and your rules and you follow them and the viewer can watch it and follow along, fine. But this movie is just like... Boom, crash. Okay, you're in this body. You're kind of. You remember some things, but you can control things. And this was all real and not a dream. Or was it? Or what? You know, it's like, it's so strange to follow what actually is going on.
When it gets to the end, and I'm just like, wait, what? Was it a dream? What's happening?
Especially because of the made up rules. So Corey Feldman, for whatever reason, knows all these rules, and he says, you can't go to sleep, or else you'll lose her forever, and then, you know, we'll eventually get there, but I think there was probably a little bit of rush production to where it was like,
there's a scene at the beginning of the movie where you see Jason Robards and Piper Laurie in bed together, and they're having a conversation. It's a pretty lengthy scene, and... There's no setup, but she talks like she's drunk. And I'm just like, why is she talking like this? And then like 4 minutes later, you see them coming back from a restaurant, entering the house, and she's drunk. And I think that they like stack the scenes wrong, or they just decided like the information imparted in the scene makes more sense here. But they never referenced why she was drunk. In bed. I mean, she's slurring her words as she's talking. And it was
a move, silly boy.
Yeah, it was so
like
weird.
Don't do that.
Oh, and the whole time that like everyone kept calling him a bad boy.
Yeah, I was like, ew.
Like, it was so weird. The other thing I noticed too is that this movie, I would say for the first good hour of it, and maybe I just got used to it and it continued to happen, I wouldn't doubt it, but like the editing, they would go to these short, tiny, like 30-second clips and then just jump to another scene. Like they would establish they establish nothing in these scenes. They would like they went all of a sudden the old guy and the old lady are on a date and they're in a montage of going on a date. And then they went to like the school at lockers and then they cut away from the school. And it was like
what they were doing in those scenes is when all of our characters were separate, they were trying to like make it look like our characters were saying the same things. Does that make sense? Like, Jason Robards would say something, and then they'd cut to Corey Feldman in high school, and Corey Feldman would basically say the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they were trying to do, and I was just like, Can we never do this?
It was a mess, especially before you knew, like, I wasn't going to watch this movie again, but when you're watching this for the first time and you're trying to follow what the hell they're doing through this editing, it's so confusing. And then, like, I get what you're saying. That was, like, in the very beginning when the old man is still testing his dream theories or whatever. Like, that's even before their bodies switch, because Corey Feldman's like, I had a weird dream of an old man. Like, that was to show you the old man was actually able to tap into something, but not do it all the way. But the scenes I'm talking about are just like random scenes, like establishing scenes where they would just like jump to the school and they'd be at lockers and they wouldn't even like say anything. And then they'd jump back to the old people doing something random. Then they would jump back to the kids. Like, they would just cut in this terrible fashion. Like, they had so much footage and had no idea how to arrange it. It was bizarre.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to their editing. Like, it was just, I don't know, man.
It's
like, I kind of agree with Tom, where it's just like, I'm sure they had these scenes that they were both coked out of their heads, and they were just the editors were just trying to salvage something.
Corey Haim didn't memorize lines. He would just show up and like try to get it. Like, he would read that the day's script the day of and like try to memorize what he could. But like, that's how he showed up to work. And I can't imagine that wasn't hard on this production.
No, like Marlon Brando, he ain't.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, like,
Marlon Brando didn't start doing that until he was like in his 50s.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, he had the Brando, you know, you have Marlon Brando in your movie. Like, that's the hook, right?
Yeah.
With Feldman or with Haim, you're just like, can you just read the lines like the night before or something, for crying out loud?
I mean, luckily,
what year was Ninja Turtles? What year was it? 89, the first movie.
90. It was after this.
Okay, so we're 2 years away from Feldman just giving up not acting, but like just doing voice work, because he's the voice of Donatello.
He's fine in that. I mean, yeah. I love that movie. He's fine.
Because all Feldman, he had to do was, I mean, read.
Yeah, right. Feldman, I feel like, was the one that could act.
Maybe
I'm wrong.
I think Feldman, at least here, I mean, Feldman's doing something, at least. I mean, Feldman has to, you know, he's a kid. He's pretty young in this movie, and he has to act like an adult and do certain things.
But
like,
he doesn't.
I'm not saying,
like,
he's good.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, he doesn't change his mannerisms at all when he's supposed to be Jason Robards.
No.
Right. Like, not
in, that's the problem,
any way, shape, or form. And what's so weird is this comes at the end of a slate of body swap comedy. So he's got other performances he could reference to see, like, this is how people do it. And he makes no attempt to act older or like Jason Robards in any way, shape, or form.
Correct. Yeah, you are right. And, like, to your point where you're saying that, like, there's a precedent for body switch movies that, like, oh, okay, I can't act like Corey Feldman. Like, I have to do, you know, Face Off is a great example where,
oh my God, yeah.
You know, like, Nicolas Cage or John Travolta is doing this insane performance, and then Cage is like, all right, man, like, I guess I'll match that.
Yeah.
I guess, like, that's fine. But, like, you know, he's not acting like John Travolta. Like, he's doing, you know, Travolta's doing a Cage and Cage is doing a Travolta. Like, that was the hook of that movie. And, man, Cage,
and I'd say it's the other way around. I'd say Travolta had to do a Nicolas Cage.
That's what I'm sorry. I mean, that's what I meant. Yes.
Travolta's subdued. He's like an FBI agent or something. But
right,
yeah,
right, right.
Cage
right.
is that's insane. And then Travolta, yeah, to his credit, like, I love that movie. And, you know, they went all out. They were definitely all in on that movie. But yeah, this movie, you're right. It's Corey Feldman being Corey Feldman. There's no attempt to even try. But, you know, he had more to do. Haim is a side character in this movie, so
right, he's barely in the movie.
Yeah, he has some throwaway lines. He kind of chases after him. He broke his leg in real life, so that's why they had to write the cast and the crutch into the movie. Like, that's
they pulled a Luke Skywalker then.
Yeah, so it's it's, you know, it's, he's just kind of hobbling around saying like, oh, Bobby, you know, blah, blah, you know, just random lines. But so it's not like he exactly had heavy lifting. This isn't, I would say, an example of his body of work here. But I don't know.
Corey Haim, I will say, Corey Haim, when he's a kid, like Silver Bullet, and some, like when he's by himself and when he was younger, he was good. Like, he was a believable kid. You liked him. Like, he wasn't like a little jerk kid like maybe, you know, Macaulay Culkin kind of is. Like, Kevin McAllister isn't the most likable kid if you go back and rewatch those movies. But he was a good child actor. And, you know, I feel like this is the beginning of when Hollywood would chew those kids up and spit them out.
It wasn't the beginning. And that had been going on for years.
Maybe it was the beginning of like us knowing about it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes way more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, like the I feel like the horrors of child acting starts with these two, and of the public finding out what they were doing to these kids, where it's just like you just make them work, and then you when they reach a certain, they're almost like a Menudo kid. Where like, oh, you're 18. See ya, kid. Good luck.
Well, and also lot of times the things that makes you things that make you cute as a child don't make you cute as an adult. And so,
yeah, that's true.
Or you go through that awkward phase before you kind of grow. And so like these kids are they get cast as because they look one way and then they don't look that way anymore. And that's a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was always an issue for Corey Feldman. I mean, he was a cute little kid and then he kept working, but I always thought he was kind of weird looking, you know,
he was kind of weird looking.
And so it was always kind of like whenever you talked about Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, it was always kind of like, well, there's the cute one and then there's Corey Feldman.
But it's not even just like, I mean, yeah, he has a unique look, but like he is weird. Like Corey Feldman is an odd dude. I mean, he has his delivery. Like I'm watching this movie and just the way he acts, like I don't remember watching a lot of movies with Corey Feldman as a kid. And, you know, I did on VHS. I watched License to Drive. But as an adult, I hadn't in a while. And so watching this and his performance, I'm just like, he's so aggressively bad. Like he's not a good actor by any means.
I think like he's, when he is around, so like he's a major part in Friday the 13th part 4. Like he's the main part of that movie and he's good. Like he's Tommy Jarvis. He's the original Tommy Jarvis. He is in the Goonies. And he's good in the Goonies, like, but again, like, he's just surrounded by different, you know, he's got Sean Astin, he's got Josh Brolin is in that movie. That was for you, Kevin. So, like, he's surrounded by people who are good, and he's just kind of hidden.
He's good in Stand By Me. But
he's great in Stand By Me, but again, he's got River Phoenix.
Well,
and,
yeah, maybe what it comes down to is he can't carry a movie. You know what I mean?
That's, I think you're right.
That he's an ensemble player.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying is that he's fine in a supporting role, but it's different when you're the lead actor and the camera's on you for 2 hours, you know, trying to carry that movie. I don't know. I mean, he definitely didn't pull it off here, and I know this isn't the best example of, you know, of what he had to work with, so you can give him a little bit of credit there. But
I'm gonna have to say that no, because I feel like Corey Haim and Corey Feldman screwed up this movie.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Their off-screen antics. Because here's why I say no. This is beyond this movie. They're coming off Lost Boys. They're coming off License to Drive. You know, they're pairing them up in a movie is a big deal. They put a lot of money into this movie. They put a lot of marketing muscle into this movie. They spent a lot of money on this soundtrack. Like they were getting full on studio support and they made this turd. And I really think the problem lies with they were too coked up and heroined up to turn in real performances. And then they had to edit around it. That, I mean, that, like I said, I couldn't find much about the production of this movie online, but watching it, that's my theory, because they, this isn't like a small, this is them at their peak, right? The peak of their,
yeah. Oh,
of,
absolutely. Of their, yeah. 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 For sure.
The peak of their commercial appeal, and the studio was doubling down and using every weapon in its arsenal to make this movie and promote this movie. And this is what they got. And I really feel like it falls, the blame lies with the two of them.
Yeah. It's hard to not fault them.
I'd meet you halfway. This script is a mess. This is a terrible, terrible plot, a convoluted, messy script. They may have not turned in their best performances, but this is a terrible screenplay.
Well,
is it a terrible screenplay?
Yes.
Or is it made terrible because they have to cut and jumble stuff together?
Right. I don't think this is ever an amazing movie, but I think there might have been a serviceable version of this movie. You know, and I just, I'm stunned at how bad this
yeah.
is.
Oh, yeah.
And there, I am shocked. I guess I'm not shocked. It's 19. What did we say this was? 88, 89?
89.
So there is a lot of F-bombs, and I'm not talking about the good one. Yeah. Like, there is a lot of
I counted two. Was there more
homosexuals
than that?
What's that?
I only counted two F-bombs. Were there more than that?
When they get to the end with like the punk gang and everybody outside the dance.
Yeah.
Like it was every other word.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then there's a, even so in this one, there's a weird Michael Jackson homage. And then there's an even weirder one in part two.
And yeah, because Corey Feldman was friends with Michael Jackson and like worshipped him.
Yeah.
But am I wrong? Like, didn't he like accuse him?
No.
No, he did not.
Okay.
He says.
Did he defend him?
Yes. The way Feldman's always defended Michael Jackson is that he said that he does not discount what anyone else is saying, just that it did not occur to him. Like, none of that happened to him.
Okay.
And having watched that HBO documentary and then heard Corey Feldman's stories, it honestly sounds like he was getting groomed, but then for some reason, yeah. Michael Jackson never pulled the trigger.
Or somebody got him away.
Yeah. And so, you know, it makes me wonder. And because, like, Macaulay Culkin says the same thing. The story sounds similar. Like, he was getting groomed, and then he didn't pull the trigger. And like, so it makes me wonder if Michael Jackson was like, you know what, these two guys are too well-known.
Too famous.
They're too big, right? Yeah.
They can fight back in a way these other families can't. And so,
right.
No thanks. But that's just my conjecture.
Okay, I knew that there was a connection between Feldman and Michael Jackson, but I just couldn't remember what that connection was. But yeah, like it's so weird. Like, it's just like when they get to the second movie and it's Feldman and Haim, but then they don't bring, like, and there's a girl, but it's not the girl from the first movie. It's a completely different girl.
Is it a different
and
character?
And they're not dating.
Is it a different character?
It's a different character.
It's Haim's sister.
And this, it's so weird because this whole movie revolves around like how much he loves her, and then to make a second one and be like, "Yeah, f her, I'm done,
forget it."
I don't care.
No, well, I also I kind of feel like maybe the girl was like, "No, thank you."
That would not surprise me.
So we really haven't talked about this movie yet, so we should just talk about what happens real quick.
Yeah. Okay. So Feldman the entire time is trying to not so much make moves, but like get his wife's consciousness to come out so that he and the girl can be together. Now, at the same time, Corey Feldman's character is in love with this real girl. So like there's this weird back and forth between the main girl is dating like this cool guy who's also a psychopath. Like, there's no other way to describe that guy.
That's the William McNamara character. Is he Jared?
Yeah. He's a
Joel?
I'm sure. He's a wackadoo.
Joel.
Yeah, Joel.
It's basically,
you know, we get
Corey
this,
Feldman trying to court this girl.
We get this big dance scene where he's like trying to win her over, and And I'm like, but I don't understand, because at this point, it's Jason Robards. So why is Jason Robards trying to win the heart of this girl on behalf of Corey Feldman? Like, there's like there. I don't think that
he's trying to win her. I think he's doing things that he thinks will get his wife's consciousness to the forefront.
But why would imitating Michael Jackson moves get his wife's consciousness to the forefront? If anything,
because so he's trying to do two things, right? Like, he has to keep this girl close to him, so he has to act like Corey Feldman, but he also knows that he has to somehow get his wife's consciousness to the forefront. I'm not saying that it's a great idea.
This is your script right here that you said could have been better with different actors. Like, none of this changes with different actors.
But I still feel like they're having to make changes on the fly because the two leads are screwing up so bad. And because it's like this scene is written as if he's trying to win her heart, and it makes no sense that he would be trying to win her heart. Like, I almost feel like there's a version where Corey Feldman's character is like, oh, well, if you get her to fall in love with me, then I'll leave the dream realm and you can have your life back or something. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And then it's also like they shoot it in this weird way where I'm like, were they even filming on the same day? Because
no,
like, you see him dancing and then you see shots of her doing this, like, I'm a bashful bunny rabbit and like giggling and being all, you know, coochie coo about it, but like they're not together for like
rock and roll coochie coo?
Yeah, like, but they're not together for like the lion's share of the scene. And it just keeps cutting back to him, and I'm like, normally dance scenes involve two people dancing, and it's like him dancing and her just standing there being all coy and cutesy, and it's really weird to where I'm like, I'm not convinced that they were together until they just get one shot of them on the floor together, and then they're done.
Oh, sure,
yeah. I bet you there was just a slew of footage and getting them to cooperate and what footage would work, and that's why the editing is so messy. They're just trying to piece together anything they can, and it doesn't make it good. But I mean, I don't think they had any other choice.
No, I don't think they did either. Like, they did what they did what they could do with what they had. So basically,
she starts to believe him, though. He convinces her enough. She's starting to like him, and he basically then goes on. He takes her like on the same dates that the old man took the woman
on.
And
she orders like the same thing the old woman would order, things like that.
So she's starting to believe him because, and then meanwhile, like, there's that other scene where he convinces Harry Dean Stanton because he knows things that only.
I gotta tell you, I didn't mind. That's the one scene I didn't mind. Like, I always find like those kind of scenes where like the buddy has to convince his buddy that he's been body swapped. Like, I find those fun. And that, like, those, that could be Harry Dean Stanton who made it work.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely elevates,
you know, because he is so good. But yeah, so. They go and then they start to fall in love with each other, but like, she's falling in love with the old man and not Corey Feldman.
I never took that as an issue. Like, I didn't see that.
But he's not Corey Feldman. He's the old man. Like, she's starting to fall in, like, the girl is starting to fall in love with the old man. They're completely different personalities.
Yeah, but she's also remembering things, and he's trying to pull his wife's consciousness out of her, though. So I think they're trying to at least show that they're accomplishing both things at the same time.
Oh, okay. You know? I took it as like, I was like, well, this is complicated. Like,
no, she's not now in love with it. Yeah, no.
When he turns back into like scummy Corey Feldman, she's like, well, this isn't what I signed up. Maybe that's why she's not in the second movie. She's like, this isn't what I signed up for. I want that creepy old man.
But basically they start to fall in love. She's starting to remember things and they're getting along just swell. But meanwhile, her abusive boyfriend, Joel, is coming around and clearly not happy with his friend stealing his girl. Her parents hate Corey Feldman. Like, Joel hits her, and then her mom blames her. Yeah, she's oh, what'd you do to irritate Joel or whatever? Like,
I do like when she's like, yeah, I did it. Whatever. Can we talk about? Okay,
yes, the parents of Corey Feldman. Yes, why have they not talked directly to him? What was that?
I was thinking of So, okay, so here's the thing with these teen movies, right? Is parents are always the bad guy, right? Like, parents are always the squares. They're always the, I was thinking about this as I was watching it. The only time I remember parents not being like stick in the mud is Dazed and Confused. Like, when Mitch walks in from like being out all night, the mom was like, all right, this is your one. Like, don't let this happen again, but you get one. And I was like, man, that's weird. Like, usually the parents are like the, you know, the stuck up ones or the meh, you know. Mm-hmm. In this one, they're all straight up villains.
Yeah.
Like, the main girl's parents drug her. Like, she breaks open a pill and pours the pill into wine and convinces her boyfriend, not her dad, mind you, the mom's boyfriend, to get her to drink this roofied wine. And it's just like, that's illegal. You can't do that. Like, that's not okay. But yeah,
but what was the deal? Explain to me why, when Corey Feldman's character Bobby talks to his parents as whichever one, it doesn't matter, the parents all say,
Do you know who Feldman's dad was?
No, who is that?
He's Moe Green.
He's Moe Green
from The Godfather.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
But okay, why do they all tell each other to tell him things when he's standing there? I did not understand that joke.
I don't know.
That idea.
I think it's supposed to be a joke, but it just never lands. And then and why is there like 30 years difference between the mom and the dad?
So I don't think that's his dad.
It's not?
Or that's not his mom.
But no, because because they even say, when did he stop calling his mom and dad? Like, that's because that's a pre-SNL Victoria Jackson is the mom.
That's who I thought that was.
And I think that,
so she couldn't have been more than like 24.
I wouldn't think. And the actor Moe Green, I'm pretty sure he's the director's father, because his name is like Alex Rocco or Rocco, and director's name, it has the same last name. So I'm pretty sure that he probably just was helping his kid out, is my guess. But it's also interesting that
he's like, do you know who I am? I'm Moe Green, damn it.
It's also interesting because like he went on to do things in Hollywood, nothing all that great. The only other thing he's directed that I've even really heard of is the Christian Slater failed Oscar bait movie Murder in the First.
I like that movie.
But
I like Christian Slater though.
But yeah, I do too. But the other, and he's listed as a writer, but the other two writers, one's Daniel Franklin, and the only credit he has is Dream a Little Dream, and then Dream a Little Dream 2, which I think is really just, he gets a credit for the characters. Like, I don't think he actually worked on it. And then one episode of Knots Landing. and then the other guy, D.E. Eisenberg, has no other film credits. Like, he doesn't even get a credit on Dream a Little Dream 2.
Yeah, I don't think it's surprising that these writers went on to do nothing. I don't know where they came from. But then, yeah, the only other guy that worked in the screenplay is the director. And you're right, Tom. He is the son of the guy that plays the dad.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but yeah, so I don't know.
They Corey Feldman and the girl get together like it's going to happen. Everything's hunky dory. And then there's the night of the dance where like the boyfriend gets all pissed off and drunked up and decides they're going to go to this after party with a gun. And he meets up like with the, so a big fight ensues. The ex-boyfriend, I guess, shows up and he's going to shoot all the street punks. And I was like, oh, we're going to kill Corey Feldman.
I mean, the whole time, like, you've got this crazy best friend or whatever that, you know, is mad about the stealing the girl. But then the real bullies, the bully bullies, not the friend bullies, have been picking on him the whole time. And they've been like trying to pick fights, and he's trying to defend Corey Feldman. But they've been like setting up for this whole like, we're going to fight, like, you know, when and where type thing. And so at the dance, they're like, go meet us under the bridge in the alley or wherever it is. And
yeah, I'm going to do it.
And but, you know, now he's all ticked off because Corey Feldman's running away with his girl. And so he's like all drunk and out of sorts. And yeah, he brings a gun to their party, quote unquote. And this was, beside from the Harry Dean Stanton sit down interaction, like, it was probably the best part of the movie, because I thought it was pretty tense.
Feldman was on point.
I mean, it was a pretty tense scene. Like, I did not know what this guy was going to do. So to their credit, I think this was the only really worthwhile scene in the entire movie where I'm just like, oh my God, who's getting shot? Like,
yeah. Well, I thought, I'm like, well, we're going to kill Feldman. Like, that's, he's going to, here's how he's going to be where he wants it to be. They're going to shoot him in the head.
Here's how you end this movie. And I turn to my wife and I'm like, here's what's going to happen. And it isn't what happened. And then I was like, well, I should have known, because then it might have been good. But what they should have done was have Feldman get shot, and then Jason Robards basically like leaves his sacrifices himself in order to keep Feldman alive. You know what I mean? And
it kills his spirit.
Feldman comes in, and then that's how he gets to stay alive, and that's the lesson of the film. You know, but that didn't happen. That did not happen.
No, they all just went back and had beers.
Yeah. He talks him down, you know, Joel doesn't shoot anybody. They all kind of just like brush it off, like, you know, Joel almost kills these kids, and they're all just like, whew, that was a close one, and they walk away. And like, it's just
exactly
so
right.
And but yeah, Feldman talks him down, and then he's like, okay, let's all just party and happy endings for all.
So now he has to go back to the girlfriend's house. At this point, the girlfriend's mom's
boyfriend
has drugged her.
Who we have not seen until this moment.
No.
God, now I forgot about this whole thing with the break-in and all this.
For some reason, the boyfriend is played by John Ford Coley.
Should I know who that is?
He was part of the light rock duo England Dan and John Ford Coley. So they sang songs like I'd Really Love to See You Tonight and Nights Are Forever Without You and We'll Never Have to Say Goodbye Again. Like, they had a lot of big hits.
Huh.
And I don't know why he is in this movie. And also the teacher that they talked, the chemistry teacher or whatever.
Yeah.
Is Mickey Thomas from Starship.
Hmm. So, okay.
But he sings.
I thought that dude looked familiar.
He's on the soundtrack, at least. He sings Dream a Little Dream. He's the rock version of Dream a Little Dream.
Those are so bad.
Oh, those two, the bookending scenes were something. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, my God.
With the old guy lip syncing, and then at the end, both of them lip syncing. Oh, jeez.
I love a good garbage cover. Just because they're fun. They're like, it's like a bad movie, but man, those are
bad.
The worst.
Bad, bad, bad.
So Corey Feldman,
he breaks into the house
with his fist, just busts through the window.
I mean, that's not the biggest problem.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is when he goes to wake up the girl and she won't, and he just rubs his blood all over her face.
That is the problem.
And the mom says, what did you do to her? Like, what? What did you do to her?
Yeah, her face is covered in blood. And then he's like, no, I've missed my opportunity to wake her up. She's asleep. And then it cuts to them, to everybody awake.
Well, the old guy wakes up, and then...
The old guy wakes up, and he's in his body, and then his wife is there. But he's, like, super standoffish, and she's dancing to, like, a quote-unquote pop song.
Yeah.
And he's like, why'd you pick this song? And she's like, I don't know, I just like it. So I guess we're saying that, like... parts of the girl got left behind,
or like maybe it just made him younger again.
Everybody learned something, you know. Everybody, yes, she's now a little hipper and younger and fun. He's not going to care about his work so much. He's got the Corey Feldman in him, where he's going to just, you know, romance her like he did with their. It's
And then of course they're sitting outside enjoying a spot of tea, and here comes Corey Feldman and the girl, and they're together. And he's like, you know, the old man says, cut on through. And he's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, he's all
like, I'm not gonna.
It's weird because it's like, he's like, you should cut through my yard. We are good now. No, I can't.
And he's like, nah,
I can't do that. And then it's like, no, really. No, I can't. But really, no, I can't.
He's maybe at another time.
He's so good. He's just so good now that he won't even think about cutting through a yard, even if he's offered. It's just not polite. He is the most upstanding. You know, not that Corey Feldman actually went through any of this. All he was doing was sitting in the guy's dream world.
Right.
But for some reason, well, now,
and we glossed over the fact that as this is resolving in the dream world, Corey Feldman, the Corey Feldman character in the dream world, is like, oh yeah, everything I've told you about how this works is complete bullshit.
Lies.
Like I made it all up. None of this matters. Everything that we've been doing for the last 2 hours, not one thing I've told you is true. Like you could have done whatever you wanted to do and it would have been fine. Like
that's where I think there was a rewrite or the production issue where I think that they were going to actually have some conflict resolution. Clearly it didn't get done, whether for monetary or for scheduling purposes and getting this to all work, but like at the end it's just like, yeah, forget about it, I was lying, which I can't imagine that was what they chose even for this movie. I can't imagine that
they were
was
just
the
like
resolution.
We gotta end this right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do anything for you
because think about this real quick before we end. Like the mom had drugged the girl, so the parents know about it. But then she's all like, what did you do to her? And there's blood all over. And the boyfriend's just like, all right, have a good night. Have a nice night, buddy. And like sends him out the front door. Like if you thought that he came in and attacked the daughter, like they're like together now. Like there were no consequences. There was no explanation. They didn't hold him for the police. Like it's such a weird resolution that they're just like, oh yeah, you broke into our window and got blood all over our daughter. It's past your bedtime. Goodbye, young man.
No worries.
Like, it makes no sense. They're just like together and happy in the next scene.
Yeah, and then it ends with Jason Robards and Corey Feldman dancing together.
Yeah.
Ugh.
In the credits. But yeah, it's pretty bad. There is like Kevin and I both started the sequel, and then I got about 20 minutes in. I was like, you got me on the first one. I'm not doing this again.
I'm convinced the second movie is improv'd. Like the second movie is them. They have an apartment together. A real quick, just little overview of what happens. There's no mention of the girlfriend, which this entire first movie is about. And Feldman and Haim live in an apartment with Haim's sister, Haim's character's
Rachel.
Sister. And now they're just doing their own thing. Feldman works at a sunglasses store.
Yes.
Haim works at a condom store called Condom Mania. Is that a thing, Tom? Has there ever been a condom store?
Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, I'm talking about like in New York City, like a building, not a little hut or inside. Yeah. I mean, like he works at Condom Mania, the Walmart of condom stores.
Yes.
No. Never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
And then your main, the guy from the first movie dies, the old man dies, and sends them a box with two sets of like Ray-Ban sunglasses. And when two people wear the sunglasses, they can feel what the other person is feeling.
So it's the Corsican brothers.
Kind of.
So
I got to the Michael Jackson homage in that one. I said, I'm done.
Was Jason Robards even in it? Or do they just old guy? I was curious if they got him for 2 minutes. You know?
No. He has died. And Joe, I don't know if you got this far, but we learned that Jason Robards' character was doing sex experiments.
No, I did not get that far.
Jason Robards' character, part of his research was how physical intimacy is the most connection of people. And this girl that's trying to get the sunglasses from them that like holds them at gunpoint later on in the movie, she talks about her research with him and their sex experiments.
Oh, you made it way further than I did. I got to the Michael Jackson scene and I said, I'm done.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
The movie is just like long scenes of what looks like improv of just random banter. And then it's little vignettes of like Corey Feldman's like, hey, I'm going to do a Michael Jackson dance. And then he does it. Like it just cuts to the most, like if you thought this movie was bad and like incohesive, oh, buddy. The second one is a nightmare.
So here's my question before we wrap up. Are there people that like this movie? I know that we're not the target demo.
Oh, there are?
Are the teenage girls from this era, were they like, this movie totally got me in the feels?
Yep.
Wow.
People love this movie. So I'm going to right now, and I want to personally apologize to people that love this movie because one of them is in our League of Show Sharers.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Who is it?
It's Aaron Marlowe.
Aaron Marlowe.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no offense to you if you like this movie. You know, we're not just like, I mean, we don't see it.
You like a deep fried taco. You got to at least own that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, no offense. We're not trashing on you or your taste. It's not for us. But then if you go to Amazon, I looked up the reviews and the ratings because I'm like, okay, is Dream a Little Dream a movie that people have fondness for? Like, I get, like, you know, some people enjoying it, but on Amazon, it has 410 reviews, and the average rating is 4.5 stars.
What is happening?
Wow.
4.5 out of 410. And the people that review it, okay, an 80s masterpiece. I'll just read the first ones that come up. I'm not going to, like, hunt for them. Because there's a 1 star that says plot made no sense. I won't read that. That's the outlier.
Right.
So five stars, an 80s masterpiece. I think this is the best of the Coreys. This movie was ahead of its time. I watched it when it was on VHS at Blockbuster and still watch it. Shelley was Corey Haim's girlfriend at the time. There's a huge Michael Jackson influence, like, no duh. Jason Robards is brilliant. Joel goes on to play them in the movie Copycat. Okay, like, they're just giving trivia. back to the plot, it is left to interpretation. If you study dreams, it makes a lot of sense. It is a classic and one of my all-time favorites. Like, I mean, there are people that love this movie. And just one more, 5 stars, one of my favorites, way better than Freaky Friday and the other movies of this type.
No,
absolutely cool storyline. Corey Feldman and Jason Robards do a superb job in this movie. Great soundtrack. Sad that all the great songs in the movie do not appear on the soundtrack. I don't tend to watch movies over and over, even when I like them. I have now seen this about 5 times since it came out in 89. That is saying a lot for me. Like,
wow.
I give up.
And Freaky Friday was great. So
that's Freaky Friday. I got to tell you, both versions are great.
Yeah, that Lindsay Lohan version was a lot of fun.
She's another one.
Yeah.
That got chewed up by the system and spit out.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask you guys real quick?
Yeah.
Is this the worst movie we've ever reviewed?
It might be. Like,
it's close.
I think this is the worst movie on a technical and a critical level. I cannot remember another movie. We watch bad movies,
yeah,
but, like, I don't think I've ever seen one this bad.
Like, honestly, this might
this
be
pretty bad.
One of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. Like, just in terms of how poorly assembled it is, like, it is really bad. These are not amateurs. These are professionals that have made movies, that have studio backing, that have, they get all the tools they need, they have finance, and then this is what came out the other end. It is pretty atrociously bad. Yeah.
And this is coming from a guy that I watched Velocipastor and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, like, that's about a pastor that turns into a velociraptor, and that movie was a lot of fun. So
yeah,
Yeah,
I like a good bad movie. This is not a good bad movie. This is just a bad movie. Heartbeats was a good bad movie. Megaforce,
yes,
good bad movie. Staying Alive, good. This is just a bad movie.
This is a bad movie. There's no. This deserves a 0%.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. Follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online and tell us how much we're wrong about not liking this movie if you want. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers. No idea what we're doing next week. Maybe another 0% project. Who knows? We will have to figure that out and let you know. But I don't know. That's what we're doing or what we're not doing. We don't know. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Jack puts Horton in his will.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.